Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Jay Hughes, aka Dr. J, and I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Speaking with Dawn Wilson, she's a transgender activist in Lexington, Kentucky, and has been active in passing fairness legislation in Kentucky. Computer programmer, owner of her own business. Welcome, Dawn.
Thank you.
Now, Dawn, you are yourself a born a man, became a woman, transsexual?
Yes, the correct term for that is male to female transsexual. I was born... I'm, of course, a man, and I've undergone some surgery. I haven't had the full surgeries yet, but I have lived as a woman for more than 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, who exactly are included in the transgender movement category? It's not just transsexuals.
No, it's not just transsexuals. You have people who are cross-dressers. You have people who are transvestites. You have people who are drag kings, drag queens. You have people who are FTMs, which is female-to-male transsexuals. But you also include in that the gay man who's actually very effeminate in mannerisms and speech, and the lesbian woman who is very butch mm-hmm. and very masculine in mannerisms and speech. They also are a part of this movement, whether they like to admit that or not.
Mm-hmm. And the transsexual, some are not... fully, they're not going to have genital surgery. They're just intermediate in some sense.
Yeah, there are people who are non-operatives. There are also the intersex who also are part of this too. There are people who are born with two sets of sexual organs, and that person's intersex. And it doesn't always have to be sexual organs. It sometimes can be that they have the chemicals makeup of a female, but they're still a male. And at age 14, they start growing breasts, or at age 15. Female starts having a beard. It can go either way like that. In the broadest sense, transgender means to go across gender. Not to change sex, not to change gender, it means to go across gender. And in its broadest sense, it mixes the elements of both masculine and female genders, and sometimes both sexes.
Now, closet transvestitism is also included in transgender movement. That's probably
right.
the largest group of transgendered people in the country.
A closet transvestite basically is a term we don't use, because transvestitism is basically associated with fetishism.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a cross-dresser, a closeted cross-dresser.
Mm-hmm.
And they do make up, in my opinion, about 80% of the community. And I deal with a lot of them here, and it's just somebody, as a friend of mine put it to me, is that they love women so much that they want to put out the most positive aspects of a female.
So almost all cross-dressing men are heterosexual.
Almost all. There are some who are bisexual, and yes, there are some who are gay. You know,
mm-hmm.
there are some gay cross-dressers.
Mm-hmm. Now, is transgenderism? I mean, people could have worse problems than this, but is transgenderism becoming so hip that it's PC to become transgender in some circles? Are there political transgender people? Is the category gender outlaw mean someone who decides, hey, I just don't like this gender system, I'm going to call myself transgender?
There are people like that. I mean, you know, I wish personally, my personal wish and concern is that I wish it wasn't such that way. I mean, I wish that everybody can just be able to be who they are. But there are some people out there who are quote-unquote gender outlaws who basically say, hey, I'm going to mess with your head for a second. One day I'm going to come in as a man, and the next day I'm going to come in as a woman and dare you to do something about it. That doesn't help people who really, really are trying to put forth the positive image. A gender outlaw is somebody basically puts out a negative image, in my personal opinion. But will I fight for their rights to do what they are doing? Yeah, I have no problems. You know, Rick Ann Wilches is a friend of mine. You know, Kate Borstein is a friend of mine. Do I like some of the things they do? No, I don't. I'd be mm-hmm. point blank with them. But in it getting the attention and getting stuff out there for people to see and drawing the attention to the real issues, I think it's effective sometimes.
Because the folks that you're really concerned about are those who have a core gender that's different from their biological gender.
Right.
And right. and that's a very different situation.
It's a very different situation, and it's one in which you see the most hate, the most discrimination, the most people getting murdered. This is where you see it at, right here.
Tell us a little bit about that. What are the forms of discrimination that transgender people face?
Well, it can go from being denied housing because they look at you, you know, they look at you and they don't like what you look like, or they see something in your background where you haven't changed all your paperwork and it comes back saying Mr. Jones instead of Mrs. Jones, and they can say, well, we don't want you in this housing situation. The other thing that you see a lot of is discrimination in health care. There have been transgender people who have been denied health care. Tyra Hunter was denied positive health care. She was allowed to bleed to death on the streets of Washington, D.C., because when they cut away her pants, even though her outward appearance and her chest was clearly female, she had not had full surgery, and there was a penal unit there, and there were jokes made, and people backed away from her, and she was allowed to bleed to death, basically. The other one that is the main problem for a lot of people, besides just hate crimes, and that basically is not a, that's a hate crime in a different sense, but hate crimes is where we have people who, for whatever reason, they go home, come in from work, and their neighbor doesn't like them being who they are, or they get beat up coming out of a club, or they just get murdered in whatever sense. It's not somebody's just street walking or doing anything. Most of these people are minding their own business. And it's up close and personal. It's stabbings. You very rarely hear somebody being shot. It's usually stabbings or strangulations or being beaten to death or run over with a car or something just really, really outrageous. Hate crimes at that point is a very serious one. And the last one is employment. Transgender people are the first ones to be denied employment because of the way they look or the way they appear or the way they sound. Most businesses who deal with a public, that deal with customer service, will look at somebody and say, I don't want that representing my company. So a lot of transsexuals, especially the ones who, quote-unquote, pass, we've heard that one before, especially if you're African-American, you've heard it, because you had the high yellow people who basically could pass for white. Well, the same term is used for transsexuals. There are some transsexuals who can pass, and there are some transsexuals who can't. And the sad part about it is the ones who pass tend to try to, quote-unquote, hide or woodwork, and they hide resources and things from other transsexuals because they don't want to be discovered. And, you know, it's some discrimination within the society as well as outside of the society.
I don't know if you saw this episode, but Allie McBeal, actually, her firm represented a trio of employees who had been fired, one of whom was a cross-dressing man. You didn't see that?
I don't watch Allie McBeal, but I've heard about it. So
yeah, how do you feel? I mean, the depiction obviously is generally comical, the depiction of transsexuals, transgender people in the media. But, you know, to have Ricky Lake and the Springer Show and other depictions out there, at least people know that this is a lifestyle option for some.
Well, I don't see it as a lifestyle option. I see it as somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Ricky Lake and Jerry Springer both make me want to regurgitate because they put out the negative aspects of what a trans person is, and the trans people they get basically are starving. They don't have any money, and here's a chance for them to make some money and get their surgery and whatever else so they can live a normal life, and they're basically prostituted in front of the media. The positive media portrayals. There are movies like Me, Thee, and Rose or My Life in Pink.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful film.
Yeah, wonderful film. Talks directly about that. There is a movie out there, Sex of the Stars, which is a Canadian film, which talks about the struggle of a trans person trying to explain to their family why they had to do this. There are others. Different for Girls recently came out, and that described a trans person whose past caught up with them. And they found out that lying about your past is not exactly something you want to deal with too much. You know, it has been played for comedy. It has been played for laughs. But recently we began to see positive portrayals. You know, in Becker, one of his old classmates came back as a woman, and he was hitting on her and didn't realize. And, of course, when she told him, he basically had to try to figure out what what his feelings was about the situation. Mm-hmm. So there are positive portrayals out there. We have people who are now running for office, like Karen Caron. I know here in Kentucky we have F.M. Chester, who's the head of the fairness movement here, who is a transgendered lesbian. You know, I try to present a positive image for African Americans, especially when I'm on things like 2020 and I'm asking questions, because there are a lot of African American kids who are told that to be this way or to end up this way is not only a sin, but, you know, basically you need to be killed. And that's a very negative message for any young person to hear.
Now, the T has been added to a lot of the GLB coalitions and marches and so forth, but do a lot of gay and lesbian activists still consider transgender folks to be the crazy cross-dressing uncle in the closet?
You know, the sad part about that is true. They do consider it that way, but I know for here in Kentucky, we are so small as a community that we had to begin to realize and learn from each other, and it takes education. It takes education on everybody's part. The GLBs have to want to learn, and the T's have to want to teach. You can't get mad at somebody if they don't want to learn. If they don't want to learn, then you have to go out and show a positive, a respectful attitude, and, you know, not bow down to them, but just strike your own path. Mm-hmm. And move ahead of them. One of the things we do here in Kentucky with BGB is basically we go and talk with school groups, organizations like PFLAG. We talk at Mary Hirsch, which is basically a center for youth who have been thrown out of their homes for whatever problems they have had, alcohol, drug, or whatever abuse. And we talk with counselors. We address the Kentucky Counseling Association. And to give them positive and clear information that they can be able to present to somebody like that.
We just have one more minute. I wanted to hit NTAC. You're the chair of the National Transgender Advocacy Coalition, www.ntac.org. Tell us how that came about.
That came about after a couple of, we do a lobbying trip every year. Many in the transgender community do a lobby trip. We go out and lobby for the Hate Crimes Prevention Act and INDA and try to get us included in that. What happened was we found out that people on the GLB activist side, as well as some members of our own community, were going behind our back and saying, we don't need to be included in these laws. You know, basically, we can be wrote out and get it passed and then write us back in later.
Because it'd be harder to pass.
And we have proven in 33 jurisdictions in this country, including Louisville and Fayette County, that that's not the case. You put us in the beginning, it will pass, and that's the end of the discussion. That's the reason NTAC was formed, so we can go up there and be a serious political organization to get these laws written and changed for all people, just not just trannies, but for the gay, lesbian, bi, and transgender communities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as Dr. King said, we either all learn to work together or we're all going to perish, but we're all going to perish.
Mm-hmm. Is NTAC a trans-feminist organization? Does it have a feminist side to it?
It has some elements of it is transfeminism. I can honestly say there are people who would like to eradicate the whole concept agenda in intact, but more than possible, they are an organization to want to stand up for everybody's rights. And if you want to look at feminism in that way, the way I consider anybody to be a feminist is very simple. If you're out there fighting for rights for women, if you're out there fighting for rights for people and reforms of health and reforms of everything from college to law, college tuition to housing, and in trying to eliminate racial prejudice and all that, then you're a feminist, whether you know it or not.
I really want to thank you for joining us today.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for an interview.
I've been talking with Dawn Wilson. She's chair of the National Transgender Advocacy Coalition, which you can find at www.ntac.org. Activist in Lexington, Kentucky. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye.
Now I'm speaking with Katrina Rose. Katrina is a transsexual attorney, a male-to-female transsexual, who has written an art law review article, which is published in this current issue of Tulane's Journal of Law and Sexuality, on the Littleton case in Texas, which we're going to talk about in a minute. She is currently also attempting to pursue an academic career in transgender rights issues. Welcome, Katrina.
Welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Now, I just asked Dawn a question about transfeminism and the uneasy relationship of transgender activism, feminist activism, gay activism. What's your experience of this? Is there what strain of the transgender movement are you in? Are you a gender outlaw? Are you someone who has more traditional orientation? Are you feminist, gay activist?
Well, I'm not a gender outlaw in the Ricky Wilchin sense, someone who just wants to totally obliterate notions of gender. I think basically that's a crock. There's always going to be male and female. The question, me being a legal, having a legal career and dealing with it from the legal end of it, what I want to break down are the barriers to where people can define themselves. When I was a practicing attorney down in Texas, most of my clients were transsexuals petitioning courts to recognize their, not only their name changes, but their gender changes. And because of the right-wing influence in Texas courts now, that's becoming more and more difficult.
So under the law, it's the current legal strategy would be better to have the distinction between men and women be recognized. And so, for instance, with the Littleton case, what's actually coming up, which I want to get to in a second. Well, why don't you go ahead and tell us, what is the Littleton case?
Well, the Littleton case started off as basically a plain Jane wrongful death case. That's almost insensitive to say plain Jane wrongful death, because obviously someone's spouse died. But in tort law, these happen all the time. Mm-hmm. However, the surviving spouse in this case happened to be a male-to-female transsexual. She sued over what she believes was bad medical advice given to her husband, who died as a result of the medical advice she thinks was bad. I honestly can't tell you whether there's really a case there or not. I'm not, my medical expertise deals solely with transgender issues. I'm a lawyer, not a doctor, Scotty. So,
okay.
Very bad Star Trek joke there. Sorry. But she sued over this. And when it got, it never quite got to trial. In a deposition over the issue, one of the doctor's attorneys either suspected she was transsexual, or at some point the issue came up, and they flat out asked her, "Were you born a male?" And the answer to that led to the issue of her being transsexual, and then they challenged her right to be able to sue as the spouse of a male.
So since she was really a man, since she was born a man, even though she was a post-operative transsexual.
Well, see, there's a problem with terminology there.
Right.
You said really a man.
Right, according to this proposed definition, if you're born with a penis, no matter whether you have it or not anymore, you're still a man.
Yes and no. But there's many levels there. One of several problems with this case is, despite the fact that by the time this issue got to court action, she had been post-operative for almost 20 years. However, she had never had her birth certificate changed to reflect that fact. She did later, though.
Is that pretty common with TGs?
Yeah, it should be, and I believe most people do, but some people either don't know to do it, and that seems to be the case with Miss Littleton. I've never met her. I've seen some interviews with her, and I know her current attorneys, who are much better than her original attorneys. That's a much deeper issue, but she has competent representation now, and the case is they're petitioning to go up to the U.S. Supreme Court on it. But she's just a typical average person who happens to be a transsexual. She does not have a legal background. I'm not sure if she ever graduated high school or not. She comes from a poor area of San Antonio, Texas, and she overcame a lot to deal with her gender issues and get on with her life. She's not rich by any means, but she has a little business, I believe it's a hair and nail salon in San Antonio, and her husband just eked out a living for years and years.
Actually,
but basically, she never knew to go do it.
Her hair salon and her case are up on the web at ChristyLee.net.
ChristyLee.net.
Right. It's a very nice website put up. Now, the very interesting follow-on. So basically, an appellate court has heard this now?
Well, it was initially at the trial court in San Antonio, Texas, when the doctor's attorneys moved for summary judgment, meaning that when you move for summary judgment, that means there's no issue that needs to go to a jury. They say, we win as it is. They said the issue of the fact that she was born male, legally at least, was totally dispositive of everything. She cannot sue, and the trial judge agreed with her. Then it went up to the intermediate appellate court in Texas, and that's where this decision came down from, the Fourth Court of Appeals in San Antonio, Texas.
Now, the follow-on to this, which makes it even more interesting, of course, her case is going to go to the Supreme Court probably, but two women who are in love, one of whom is a trans woman, was born a man, have gone, Jessica Wicks and Robin Wicks, have gone to get a marriage license, right?
And that's going to be a test of the rule that was allegedly put into law in the Littleton case. One of the bigger problems with the Littleton case, other than the fact that it really is just soaked with bigotry, is that it doesn't do what the judges who wrote it think that it's going to do.
Right.
They did not in any way, shape, or form consider intersexed people.
Right.
They just assumed that male penis, XY chromosomes, female vagina, XX chromosomes. They refused to consider any way that this might affect someone who does not have XX or XY chromosomes. They refused to consider how it would affect someone born with a penis who has XX chromosomes. And for those of you out listening, think, oh, that there's no such thing. Well, you're wrong.
Right.
In the short time that I practiced law in Texas, one of my male-to-female transsexual clients began the gender transition process, began having what she thought were some complications, went back to her endocrinologist, had some more tests run, found out that she indeed has XX chromosomes. So you see this court ruling that says what's on your birth certificate is what you're going to stay for the rest of your life, but it also talks about chromosomes are what you are. Well, this client of mine, and I know another person in this situation, and there are thousands of people like this. They're born with a set of particular genitals, in that client's case, male, but they have female chromosomes.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't the preferable outcome for the transgender rights movement be the recognition by the Supreme Court that gender is a crock and that gender should not be a basis on which we make distinctions between American citizens and their rights, and therefore de facto legalize gay rights, gay marriage?
That is certainly one possibility. And in the article that I wrote that one byproduct of a case like Littleton going up to the Supreme Court will be, and in fact is, the only way that the Supreme Court is ever going to be able to take a look at the Defense of Marriage Act, which in my view is probably the most unconstitutional thing ever to come from the United States Congress.
Right.
It is a blatant, and forget the sexual orientation rights issue, it is a blatant violation of Article 4's full faith and credit guarantee.
Okay, quickly, because we don't have much time.
All right.
Hate crimes, another big issue for transgender activists. What is the action nationally on hate crimes?
Well, the Hate Crimes Prevention Act is one of many things that are languishing in the current Congress. I would not bet on anything like that passing between now and January of 2001. There was recently, and I forget the precise wording that was actually introduced, but in a committee hearing, Barney Frank introduced a specific resolution to put gender identity into, and I don't believe it was the HCPA, Hate Crimes Prevention Act, but I believe it was a provision of the Violence Against Women Act, which is a kind of a sister act of the Hate Crimes Prevention Act. My personal view is that, and I know this rubs a lot of people the wrong way, but I think that hate crimes laws are a waste of time.
Because violent acts against anybody is already illegal, so...
Well, yes, that's true. However, when you say that, you almost fall into the ridiculous statement made by George W. Bush that says all crime is hate crime, and we all know that's a total lie.
Mm-hmm.
My view is, yeah, acts like what happened to James Byrd, Matthew Shepard, and all the transsexual victims of hate crime who you never hear about because the mainstream media doesn't want you to hear about them, and quite frankly, some gay rights organizations don't want you to hear about them either.
Mm-hmm.
Those acts are abominable, and in most states across the country, if the crime is prosecuted, the person's either going to get the death penalty or life in prison without parole. I mean, I live in Minnesota right now, and Minnesota doesn't have the death penalty, but there is life without parole for someone who commits first-degree murder. The trick is if the case is prosecuted, and if the victim is someone who the local prosecutor thinks is a piece of garbage and doesn't deserve to be avenged by a prosecution, it isn't going to get prosecuted, hate crimes law or no hate crimes law.
Mm-hmm.
My view is the true Hate Crimes Prevention Act is employment discrimination law.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know with transgendered people, it's true to a lesser extent these days with gays and lesbians, but it certainly was 30, 40 years ago when sodomy laws were first-degree felonies in most states. If you were branded as homosexual, you basically ended up being a prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a prosecutor too, but that's a pun I don't want to get into. But yeah, far too many people ended up on the streets selling their bodies just because once you got branded as homosexual, there wasn't anything else for you to do. In far too many jurisdictions now, it's the same with transgendered people. If you're 16 years old, your parents find out that you're a cross-dresser or want to go through with gender reassignment, a couple of different things can happen. You can have some really cool parents who want to help, and there are some out there. Make no mistake. I do know several. But at the other end of the spectrum, and there are far more of these than cool parents, the parents will kick the person out on the street. And once you're identified as a trans person with no education, there's only two things that are going to happen to you. You're going to die, or you're going to become a prostitute. And, of course, after that, you're probably going to die. But with employment discrimination protection and educational discrimination protection, there's some avenue to escape from that.
There's legislation in California being proposed, correct? Anti-discrimination legislation that includes transgender folks?
Well, sort of. California is sort of a microcosm of what many transgendered people do not want to happen at the federal level. California last year passed a state version of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. However, that law only included sexual orientation defined as homosexuality, heterosexuality, or bisexuality. Transgendered people were not covered. The federal Employment Non-Discrimination Act basically is the same thing. Transsexuals, transgendered people, cross-dressers, gay people who happen to be trans-identified, even though they have no intention of ever totally changing genders, they're not covered.
Mm.
If you're a gay man who cross-dresses on the weekend, you could be fired for the cross-dressing. Say, oh, the employer will say, we don't care about you being gay, but we don't like the gender thing. And there would be no legal recourse.
I'm going to have to bring it to a close there. That's been fascinating, and I hope to have you back.
Okay.
There is, for my listeners, they can find a link to Gender Talk, which is a weekly program. Have you, you've been on Gender Talk?
I've been on Gender Talk. I was talking about Littleton versus Prang right about the time it happened back last year.
I've been talking with Katrina Rose, a transgender rights attorney and burgeoning academic. She has a law review article in Tulane's Journal of Law and Sexuality on the Littleton case. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, glad to be here.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS-FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes@changesurfer.com. That's jhughes@changesurfer.com. Also, check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website, www.changesurfer.com. Previous Change Surfer radio programs can be listened to from www.changesurfer.com and streaming MP3, thanks to the Radio for All project.